Happy snow day, everybody. We will have Beth Fertig back later on, by the way, this morning. She will be reporting from a shoe store, I do believe, to see how boot sales are going. You would think the world was coming to an end, the way everything is shutting down for an anticipated foot of snow. We will ask, what is your blizzard status later during today's program? And you can post it to our webpage anytime at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Anyone from the True North listening? Later, we'll take calls and talk about how you dealt with a foot of snow up there. We'll take those calls later if you hail from Minnesota or somewhere like that. Also, does a storm like this divide the workforce into train people and car people? It looks like car people stay home from work, train people come in and do everyone else's job. Are you a train person doing double duty in your office right now? Post your car person, train person story to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll take those calls later, too. And the all-important question, do you go sledding in the middle of a blizzard, or do you wait until it stops? You can post about all those things right now to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll take those calls later. And here's something else you can do if you're snowed in right now. Later in the program, we will have President Obama's Chief Technology Officer and Chief Transparency Officer to help launch their new open government initiative. We have on our webpage right now a link to some specific government spending data. Everybody's concerned about government spending. Now you can look up some of the specific streams of it that just became available. And we're inviting you to check it out and take part in a simple crowdsourcing experiment. Enter your zip code or the zip code of your birth and see what the government is spending there and on what. And you'll see that you can ask it various other questions if you choose to. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. This is a good one to do with your kids in place of their canceled social studies classes today. They'll love that, right? And we'll talk about your findings later on today's show with President Obama's Chief Technology Officer and Chief Transparency Officer. But right now, you can enter your zip code or the zip code of your birth and see what the government is spending there and on what. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. But first, is it constitutional to expel a sitting senator for a misdemeanor domestic violence conviction? That is the question that is about to face the New York State Senate after last night's vote to expel Hiram Montserrat of Queens for his conviction for misdemeanor assault on his girlfriend. He will not go quietly from office. In fact, the renowned civil rights attorney Norman Siegel has taken Montserrat's case, and Norman would have been filing a challenge in court right now if the courts weren't closed due to snow. So instead, Norman Siegel is here. Hi, Norman. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning, Brian.
Little bit of snow and the wheels of justice grind to a halt, huh?
I know. We stayed last night. We were ready to go to court, and now the blizzard of 2010, which so far is not a blizzard, the court's closed. I don't have the keys to the courthouse door, so here I am.
Here you are. And you've been a campaigner against domestic abuse in the past, we should point out. So why take the case of this man after what he did?
Well, the case raises substantial questions concerning what a constitutional democracy is all about. It's not just about Hiram Montserrat's rights as an elected official. It's also about the rights of the voters in his district to choose their elected officials. It's about the rule of law. Very simply, our position is that the Senate does not have the authority to expel Montserrat or any senator. And second, even if they did, their actions have not been consistent with due process of law. Just very quickly, up until 1821, in the New York State Constitution, there was explicit language that you could purge the members. The 1821 Constitutional Convention deleted that language. And although there have been resolutions for someone to be expelled or excluded, those people resigned. Montserrat did not resign. So this will be a case of first impression. As far as I can determine, there's been no person who has challenged the power of the legislative body in New York State when they wanted to expel them. This will be the first time.
The Senate has rules that say if he was convicted on a felony charge, he would have automatically been expelled under the Senate rules. Because he was convicted of only misdemeanor domestic assault, the Senate had to investigate and decide what to do, and they voted to expel last night. Would you have filed the same lawsuit if he had been convicted of a felony and was automatically expelled under the Senate rules?
The principle that I've just articulated would apply to a challenge for someone convicted of a felony, but we don't have to face that issue because that's not the facts here.
Eric Schneiderman is going to be with us next. He's the state senator who led the investigation into Hiram Montserrat. He says this is there have been a few expulsion cases since the 1821 constitutional amendment.
Not true.
That you refer to. I'm reading from Juan Gonzalez's column, and he takes your position, by the way, in the Daily News today. A state assemblyman who accepted bribes back in 1861. In 1920, lawmakers refused to seat four socialists. That's not a great precedent to stand on. Refusing to seat elected officials because of their views. This says Schneiderman's report mentions the 1987 case of Gertie Lipschutz. She was a Queens Assemblywoman who admitted providing a no-show job in exchange for political support. After authorities granted Lipschutz immunity from prosecution in exchange for her cooperation, an assembly committee concluded that there was considerable doubt about the power of the assembly to expel a member, so Lipschutz stayed.
Right. And again, the important point here is that I've read their report more than once. And there was a senator in 1779 for fraud charges, and in 1781 for neglect of duty, not really being in the Senate. But since then, according to their report, there's no one who actually was expelled. There was a senator who resigned once they put in a resolution. But the facts here are different. And one way or the other, we'll get a court decision saying whether or not they have the constitutional and legal authority to do that.
You mentioned the Constitution and the rights of the voters in this respect. What's the due process question?
Due process questions are the right to notice of specific charges, the right to a hearing, the right to confront witnesses, to cross-examine them, to have open hearings, to review all the evidence that was used through the select committee. That did not happen. And there is precedent where in other states where state senates expelled people where they didn't give them the proper due process, where the courts have nullified the removal.
If the Senate were to set up such a process with a right to a hearing, the right for Montserrat to confront witnesses against him, challenge the evidence, would that satisfy you?
No, that would be one part. See, what they have to do is they got to recognize that currently they don't have the authority to do it. So in the 1987 Lipschutz situation, that report made a recommendation that there should be a constitutional amendment to specifically set forth the authority to expel people in the Assembly and in the House. And then second, what they would have to do is create a legislative law that has what you just said, due process, plus setting forth what the criteria would be for removal. If they did that prospectively, and I'd recommend that they do that, then you could go ahead. But they don't currently have that.
Do you see this in minority rights terms at all? Montserrat was putting it that way himself. He's from a minority district, disenfranchising minority voters. Is that just playing the race card?
I don't think it's playing the race card. It's an issue that the legal team is discussing. I know in the memorandum, when we talk about the history and the importance of the right to vote, we point out the importance over the last 40 years of African-American, Latino, and Asian-Americans registering to vote and, in fact, electing people from their groups to be the first of their group in specific elected positions. And the courts, in the federal courts and the Supreme Court, the Adam Clayton Powell case, the Julian Bond case, they're all sensitive to the fact that the right to vote is just not to cast your ballot, but to make sure that there's no disenfranchisement or nullification of the vote. So it's something that you take into account On the other hand, there's no, at this point, separate cause of action that we're going to file based exclusively on race.
Juan Gonzalez, in that Daily News column that I mentioned, takes your side on the legal argument, but he also says he wishes Montserrat had resigned, that somebody who did what he did to his girlfriend really doesn't belong in the state Senate. Would you be kind of disgusted if the voters do reelect him this fall?
That's up to the voters. And that's the point of a constitutional democracy. Given the information that people now have, let the voters decide. That's what our system is all about. You don't allow the legislators to define who will represent people. And second, as of this moment, people in that part of Queens do not have a state senator, and their voice will not be heard.
New York civil rights attorney Norman Siegel, now representing Hira Montserrat. Norman, thanks a lot.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Keep up the good work.
But now the response to Norman Siegel. In defense of expelling State Senator Hira Montserrat for misdemeanor domestic assault, State Senator Eric Schneiderman, who did lead the Senate committee that investigated the case. Hi, Senator. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning.
Did you hear Norman Siegel just now?
I heard most of it, yes.
So on the constitutional question, he says the people of that district in Queens are left without a senator, and it should be up to them.
Well, ultimately, it is up to them. The governor has already called a special election for March 16th, and it's important to note that we've never sought to exclude Senator Montserrat. That is to say, he can't take a seat. We expelled him. He's free to run in the special election. He's free to run again in the September primary. We just exercised, you know, the Senate's power under Legislative Law Section 3 to expel a member because, quite frankly, the overwhelming majority of people in the Senate thought that his conduct was just so despicable that it rendered him unfit to serve. And we can't stop the people from reelecting him if they choose to do so. But as a body, we felt that the gravity of this domestic violence offense, his cover-up of the offense and the manipulation of the victim were just really beyond the pale.
The reason Norman Siegel framed this in minority rights terms is that he's got experience with cases like representing Julian Bond in Georgia in the 1960s when the Georgia legislature voted to refuse to seat him, clearly on racial grounds as you look at that history. I referenced the case that Juan Gonzalez brings up today of Gertie Lipschitz, where the assembly decided that they don't have the right to unseat her. Reading from Juan Gonzalez now, neither does the notorious ouster case in Congress involving Harlem's Adam Clayton Powell Jr., which the Supreme Court also overturned. So when you look back at this, if you set up a precedent that says the Senate can decide that one of its members is heinous for reasons that are not delineated in the Constitution, then you might start with political purges and all kinds of things.
Well, this is certainly a power that we exercise with great care, and the fact that there are so few expulsions reflects the fact that the members of at least the New York State legislature are very cognizant of the fact that this is a very serious power to be exercised rarely. Legislative Law Section 3, however, which is was enacted many, many years ago and has never been challenged and is a valid act of the legislature until some court declares it unconstitutional, which I'm confident they won't, states very clearly each house has the power to expel any of its members after the report of a committee to inquire into the charges against him shall have been made. In this case, the Senate set up by resolution our committee. We made an inquiry. We issued a report. And then the Senate voted last night overwhelmingly, 53-8, to expel him. And the committee recommended that a resolution for expulsion be put on the floor 9-0. Democrats and Republicans, all of from upstate and down. This was not a close call, I guess is what I'm saying, Brian. There may be cases where you could say, you know, maybe this is a borderline case. There was no politics in this. People on both sides of the aisle just recognized that Senator Montserrat's conduct. And it's not just that it was not a misdemeanor conviction that really was the issue. We made a specific statement in our report that it was not the fact of the misdemeanor conviction that led us to recommend expulsion. It was the totality of the circumstances, including things like, the victim, Ms. Geraldo. All of her early statements after the incident were that he had, assaulted her, that he was crazy, she said, to the police, to the hospital folks. We have a finding in the report based on interviews with Senator Montserrat's employees and people who are former employees that she got locked into that statement when, after she'd been up all night, that same day they got her in a van on Queens Boulevard and got her to sign an affidavit in English, which she has testified she is not fluent in, drafted by an attorney who works for Senator Montserrat, notarized by a staff member, that locked her into the statement that it was an accident. So,
let me jump into that. Isn't that a matter for the court to decide? I mean, the court already considered that evidence and whether it should be a felony or a misdemeanor, and whether she was telling the truth the first time or telling the truth the second time. Wasn't that for the court rather than for a political body, the state senate committee that you had?
Well, it's not a political body, but the court never considered this evidence because this has to do with how he conducted himself. The court was limited to all the actions that night. The court didn't look into how he was handling the defense. There could be another inquiry on that. But it's important to emphasize that this is not something that should be done except in the most severe and egregious circumstances. But in addition to the judicial system having, obligations and responsibilities under the Constitution, the legislature, as a separate branch of government, has the power under the New York State Constitution to police its members, to determine the qualifications of members, and under Legislative Law Section 3, which, is based on Article 3, Section 9 of the New York State Constitution, we clearly have the power to expel members. We don't do it often. But the important thing I'm trying to emphasize is there was a lot of evidence in the committee report and a lot of factors that really were not within the narrow scope of evidence presented in a criminal proceeding. This is not a criminal proceeding. This is not something beyond a reasonable doubt. This is a separate branch of government saying we have an obligation. We have the power to expel, and therefore we have the obligation to consider.
Are you saying that the standard should be lower to decide to overturn the expressed will of the voters than it should be in a court of law?
Well, it's a completely different type of proceeding. That's like saying, if you're brought up on criminal charges in a brokerage firm, is the standard of the court different from the standard of the stock exchange that may choose to say you've lost your license? There are always parallel proceedings, but the United States Constitution and the New York State Constitution clearly direct and authorize and empower the legislature to police itself. And I guess part of the thing that bothers me a little about these arguments is that, after all, in the legislature, we have an obligation to enforce certain rules. We have an obligation to enforce certain rules for our members. This has been true in every legislature since the Constitution was established. U.S. Congress has expelled members. State legislatures across the country have expelled members. We have the power. The question is, when do we exercise it? And, in New York State, we exercise it rarely, but there's a sense that, and again, this is not a close call. If this was something where half the members were unsure, it would be a different matter. This conduct was just so appalling that, the overwhelming majority of the members of the Senate said, look, we put up with a lot here, but this we can't do. We can't stop the voters from reelecting him, but we can make the statement that right now we believe he's unfit to serve, and we impose the most severe sanction we can impose, which is to expel him. The voters can choose March 16th. They can choose him as a senator or someone else as a senator. But this was our statement as a body.
Senator Schneiderman, before you go, any comment on the media circus surrounding the unknown allegations that may not even exist against the governor in a so far non-existent New York Times story?
No. I'm hearing really wild rumors in all sorts of bizarre detail about what's supposedly in it. But I can't wait to see it. I don't know what it is. I talked to the governor. He doesn't know what it is. So we'll all find out together.
Word is that Democrats in the legislature are not defending him against yellow journalism aggressively because he's been tough on your budgets and he has lost the legislature politically. Fair charge?
No, I think people just don't know what to make of this. I mean, there have been, look, there are things that he's done that, you know, are questionable. And, you know, I don't think anyone, I served with him for years. He's a friend of mine. But I don't think anyone has any sense that they know what the facts are. So once the story comes out, you know, people will defend or weigh in. But you can't charge yellow journalism if something hasn't been printed yet. You can charge rumor mongering. But if we, you know, if we charge people for that, Albany would be shut down.
Well, the yellow journalism would be on the part of the news organizations that are running and running and running with this without even knowing what the Times is going to publish.
Oh, okay, you're talking about not the Times, but the others. You know, I don't know. I guess so. Repeating the fact that there are rumors out there is something maybe we live with every day in government and politics, so perhaps we're a little bit hardened to it. I do think this is unfairly tough on the governor to have to deal with reports and allegations that no one has actually ever documented and the real charges have never come forward. I'm hopeful that the Times will print their story soon so we can get it out in the open and the governor can respond.
State Senator Eric Schneiderman, thank you very much, as always.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up in just a minute, the Connecticut Attorney General, Richard Blumenthal. He hopes to succeed Chris Dodd as U.S. Senator from Connecticut. Stay with us.